Welcome to the Roto Report. Let's start today by looking at Super Bowl 48, or as I like to call it, the Browns Head Coaching Bowl. Think about it now. You've got the Broncos, the number one seed in the AFC, going up against the Seahawks, the number one seed in the NFC. What are the Broncos known for? They're known for their offense, led by Peyton Manning and their offensive coordinator, Adam Gase, who happens to be a guy the Browns want to talk to for their head coaching job. The Seahawks are known for their defense. Who's their defensive coordinator? Dan Quinn, who the Browns have already talked to about their head coaching job. So you've got the two guys that the Browns really want at this point in their head coaching search going after each other in Super Bowl 48 in New York. Gase's offense against Quinn's defense. If you're the Browns, do you pick whoever wins the Super Bowl? Well, that might not be as easy as it sounds, because there are reports that Gase might not want the job or will turn the job down and wait another year. I think a lot of that depends on what happens with Peyton Manning. I think if Peyton Manning comes back, there's a good chance that Adam Gase will stay in Denver. But think about this. If Peyton Manning wins the game, if he beats Seattle, wins his second Super Bowl, he'll be the first quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl, starting quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl with two different teams. He's had the greatest individual season of a quarterback in NFL history, and if he goes out on top, plus with his neck surgeries that he's had in the past, and there are some reports that maybe he's a little dinged up now, why wouldn't you walk off into the sunset a Super Bowl winner having the greatest individual season a quarterback has ever had? If that's the case, I could see Gase then saying, you know what, I better cash in now while my name is hot, because if I come back to Denver next year without Peyton Manning and we don't do as well, my stock could drop a little bit. So I'm going to cash in while my name is hot and take the Cleveland Browns head coaching job. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. Most of the world is going to be focusing on Peyton Manning against Richard Sherman and that defense from Seattle and who wins Super Bowl 48. Browns fans are going to be focusing on which one of those two coordinators maybe ends up being their next head coach. And another tie-in with Peyton Manning. Think about this. We all know that Jimmy Haslam loves Tennessee and he has a good relationship with Peyton Manning. More than likely, he's reached out to Manning through some back channels, agents, whatever, to have Manning put a good word into Gase about what the Browns are doing and what Jimmy Haslam is all about. Jimmy Haslam, I think his dream scenario is this. Hire Adam Gase, Manning retires, and he comes over to the Browns and works either in the front office or as an offensive coordinator with Gase or as some type of coach with Gase, and they go out and they draft the SEC quarterback of their dreams in Johnny Manziel. I think that would be the dream scenario for the owner, Jimmy Haslam, of the Cleveland Browns. Now, that's a lot of ifs and whats and candy, and you know that old saying. But that, I think, is what Jimmy Haslam would love to see happen if he could draw it up, get Adam Gase and Peyton Manning to come to the Browns, and then draft Johnny Manziel. But getting back to the Super Bowl that everybody else will be focusing on, what a great matchup of offense against defense. Peyton Manning surgically ripped apart Bill Belichick's defense in the AFC Championship game. He's thrown for over 60 touchdowns, combining the postseason with the regular season. No, excuse me, 59 touchdowns. He's one shy, I believe, of hitting 60 touchdowns for the season, but he's thrown for over 6,000 yards already this season, counting the regular season games and the postseason. You've got him going up against Pete Carroll and Dan Quinn's defense, led by Richard Sherman on the back end. And as far as Richard Sherman goes, with what he said after the game about Michael Crabtree, there's obviously more to it than just what happened in that game as to why he was talking the way he was. Now, Richard Sherman talks no matter who it is. He'd probably rag on me if I were to come and question him after a game with an interview, something along those lines. He just picks on everybody and anybody. So anybody is fair game for Richard Sherman. But if you've pissed Richard Sherman off, or there's a history there, and his team ends up winning and he ends up making a play, you're going to hear and feel the wrath of Richard Sherman. And that's what happened with Michael Crabtree. The guy talks the talk, but he also walks the talk. In other words, he backs it up. And I think it was Muhammad Ali who said, It ain't bragging if you can back it up. And that's what Richard Sherman has done. I take him on my team in a heartbeat, in a passing league, in a league that the rules favor the passing game, the quarterback, the wide receivers. If you can get a corner like Richard Sherman who can shut down the opposing team's top receiver, take half the field away, you take him in a heartbeat, and I would take Richard Sherman and all his brash talk and trash talking and swag that goes on any day of the week. I'd want him on my team. As far as who's going to win Super Bowl 48, I picked the Denver Broncos at the beginning of the season to win it all. I thought they'd be playing the San Francisco 49ers in the Super Bowl. It's not. It's the Seattle Seahawks. And I just think that Peyton Manning, this is his year, a chance, like I said, to go out on top, and they're going to find a way to score one more point than Seattle and win Super Bowl 48. And Peyton Manning caps off the season with an MVP in the Super Bowl to have the most remarkable year a quarterback has ever had in NFL history. Let's turn our attention now to the Cleveland Cavaliers here in the Roto Report. Today is game 41, the 41st game of the season. That means it's the halfway point here on Martin Luther King Day. And as we look at the Cavaliers' record coming into this game against Dallas today, they are 15-25. I thought they would be better than this. I had them pegged at 41-41 before the season started. I thought they'd be a 500 basketball team with a spot in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, either 6, 7, or 8. Well, they need to do some work to get back to 500. Again, they enter today 10 games under 500, but in the Eastern Conference playoff race, they're only 2 games out of the 8th spot and 2 games out of the 7th spot. And if you're looking to move up to that 6th spot where I thought they had a chance, they're only 4.5 games back of that 6th spot in the Eastern Conference. And since they acquired Luol Deng, they're 3-2. They went out on a West Coast trip and ended up coming back with a winning record at 3-2, and Luol Deng was the reason for that. He's averaging 18 points, 4 rebounds per game in only 30 minutes a contest for the Cavaliers. He brings that defensive toughness that Mike Brown has been preaching and begging this team to play with all season long. He is a leader on the floor and in the locker room. He fills their biggest need, which was the small forward spot. Luol Deng, I've got to give credit to Chris Grant. Again, I don't like all of his draft picks. I think he struggles with his draft picks, but the trades he's made for the Cavaliers in the last couple of years have worked out for Cleveland. And the Andrew Bynum signing at the beginning of the year, we thought he would contribute in a big way. Well, he has. He was a big trade chip that allowed them to land Luol Deng, and that was a huge get for Chris Grant and the Cavaliers, and we're seeing how much he can impact the game at both ends of the floor, and hopefully also will rub off on Kyrie and Deion about playing defense. Speaking of Kyrie, he's been up and down this season. He's going to end up starting in the All-Star game because Uncle Drew and Kyrie, that combination, are going to get voted in as a starter, and you could say he deserves it because he averages over 21 points per game, 6 assists per contest, but for me, in order for him to elevate to really not just an All-star level, a superstar level, he's got to start playing defense. He's horrific on defense, and again, that's where I hope Luol Deng will rub off on him, and Kyrie will realize both ends of the floor matter if you want to be an NBA champion and a superstar in this league. Tristan Thompson almost averaging a triple-double through the first half of the season, 12 points per game, 9.8 rebounds, and here's what I have to say about Tristan Thompson. I didn't like the pick when they made it, fourth overall. I would have gone with Valanciunas, who, by the way, just got benched in Toronto. He was starting but got benched. He's been up and down in his first 2 years. This is year 3 for Tristan Thompson. And Tristan Thompson has improved to the point where he's almost a double-double every time he steps on the floor. Now, there are times where he'll go for 17 points and 21 rebounds, and then he'll come back with 6 points and 6 rebounds. So it's not consistent night in and night out, but when you average it out, it's almost a double-double. And more impressive than all of that is the fact that he switched from shooting left-handed to right-handed this year, and he's at 47% from the field and 67% from the free throw line. So I've seen improvement from Tristan Thompson, and that's a bonus for the Cavaliers. In his third year, they were expecting big things from him. I wouldn't say he's delivering big things, but he is getting better. Deion Waiters, when they drafted him again, I didn't like it. I would have gone with Harrison Barnes at that point in the draft, but They went ahead and took Deion Waiters, and when they drafted him, I said from day one that Jim Boeheim used him off the bench for a reason. There was a reason he wasn't starting at Syracuse, and I wanted the Cavaliers to use him in the same way. They feel, well, he's the fourth overall pick. He's going to be a starter. We're going to put him out there. And that just didn't work out. He and Kyrie are both ball-dominant guards. They need the ball in their hands to be effective. And that's why I didn't like the fact that they were starting him. I figured he would be better suited coming off the bench where he could be the lead guard of that second unit and go out and create for himself and maybe a little bit for others, but he's more of a scoring guard, kind of like Kyrie, than he is an assist guy, and he doesn't come off screens well. Not the brightest light bulb in the chandelier on defense. So they finally decided to move him to the bench where I thought he belonged all along, and he's one of the better sixth men now in the NBA scoring-wise. Overall for the season, averaging just under 15 points per game, and his shooting percentages are far too low, though. 40% from the field, 37% from three-point range, and his free-throw percentage is at 69%. Those numbers have to come up for Deion Waiters, and what it comes down to there is two things. Shot selection, just because you're open doesn't mean it's a good shot, Deion. And number two, consistency on his jumper, whether it's a two-point jumper or a three-point shot. Straight up, straight down. He drifts, he fades. He's kind of like Ubaldo Jimenez almost. When you look at what Jimenez does as a pitcher, there's so many things that can go wrong in that long delivery of his. His mechanics, one thing is out of whack. It throws everything out of whack. Same with Deion Waiters. Deion Waiters' shot, he drifts, he fades, the elbow's in, it's out, it's behind his head, it's in front of his, it's never the same jump shot every time. If he can get more consistent in his shot, in the fundamentals of his shot, I expect those shooting percentages to go up. I don't know if that's going to happen this year or that's going to have to happen in the offseason. The way I look at it, if Tristan Thompson can go from shooting left-handed to right-handed and improve his numbers, no reason why Deion Waiters can't improve his shooting percentage in the offseason. Anderson Varejao, big question now. February 22nd is the trading deadline. What do you do with Andy? Do you keep Andy? 8.5 points, 10.2 rebounds, your most effective defensive player next to Luol Deng on this team, Mr. Energy, Mr. Hustle? Or do you say to yourself, he's made it this far without injury? His value may never be higher to a team who's challenging for an NBA championship. Do they finally deal Anderson Varejao, or do they hold on to Andy? Because when healthy, this guy's grabbing you double-digit rebounds and almost 10 points per game over the last couple of years. That's the big question that they have to ask themselves over there in the Cavaliers front office. What do you do with Anderson Varejao? And also, real quick, a little tip of the cap to CJ Miles, inserted into the starting lineup, averaging over 10 points per game, and he is their best three-point shooter. He set the record earlier for, 10 three-pointers in a game, Cavalier record. They need CJ to be that threat from the outside because that helps space the floor for the Cavaliers on offense, along with Luol Deng. If he can continue to knock down outside shots, that's going to create more lanes for Kyrie Irving to drive through, for Deion Waiters to drive to the hoop for. So hopefully CJ Miles can continue to shoot at a good clip, and the Cavaliers need more from Jared Jack coming off the bench. They just do. He's been a disappointment. I love that acquisition, free agent signing in the offseason, and to this point, Jared Jack's been a disappointment. He needs to pick it up in the second half of the season. Like I said, they're coming off a 3-2 West Coast trip, so let's see if they can follow that up with a good homestand of at least 4-1. They've got five straight games at home here, and they're going up against Dallas today. Then it's the Bulls, the Bucks, the Suns, and the Pelicans. I expect no less than a 4-1 record on this homestand, and then they close out the month of January at New York. So here's what I'm expecting. Cavaliers going into today's action 15-25. By the end of the month, I expect the Cavaliers to be 20-26, six games under 500, and I think that will have them in the eighth spot or maybe a half game out or a game out, but I expect them to get closer and closer to the 500 mark by the end of this month. And we'll see in the second half of the season then if they can build off of that and maybe end up being close to a 500 team. If they get to 500, they're going to be in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. Luol Deng has been a huge asset and hopefully starting to turn this thing around, already 3-2 since he's been here. And then, of course, the trading deadline. We'll see if they delete from the team in trading an Anderson Varejao, or if they add to the team another shooter would be ideal. So there's your Roto Report. I like the Denver Broncos to win Super Bowl 48 with Peyton Manning as your MVP. And in Cleveland, like I said earlier, it's not going to be Super Bowl 48 that they'll be focusing on. It'll be the Browns head coaching bowl with Adam Gase against Dan Quinn, the O coordinator, the D coordinator. Which one of those two is going to end up coming to Cleveland, or is it going to be somebody else totally off the grid that we haven't even heard from yet? Or could it be Mike Pettine, or maybe Rich Bisacci from Dallas, the special teams coach, or Mike Munchak, the former head coach of the Tennessee Titans? Could he be the wild card candidate? Or are they going to be able to steal Gus Malzahn? They've got to do something, because this year's search does not even compare to last year's search. I wanted Bill O'Brien as the head coach of the Browns. He made the move early to go to the Houston Texans. I'm not enamored with any of these candidates, to be perfectly honest with you. It doesn't compare to last year when you had Bruce Arians available, Andy Reid available, Chip Kelly, Doug Marrone, Mark Trestman. So they better get this right. Banner, Lombardi, Haslam, they have to get this right. I know they want either Gase or Quinn, but if both of those guys say no, then is Bisacci, Pettine, or Malzahn, or Munchak a guy that they can convince to come here and take this job? Like I said earlier, I think their first choice now is Adam Gase of the Denver Broncos, and then Dan Quinn is the fallback plan. So we'll see how that plays out in Berea. We'll see what the Cavaliers do here in the second half of the season. Hopefully, they'll give us some playoff basketball. Before you know it, the Indians will be getting it going in spring training. There's your Roto Report. Until next time, C-Town. Always great talking with you. Keep it real.